and music fans. This is Sekin, your host on Sekin on Cinema and Sound, and I'm joined here today by my sister.
Hi guys, my name's Kylie and I'm Sutton's sister, and I'm so happy to be here today.
And she will be acting as my co-host. Today we're talking about something very special. This is the original Star Wars trilogy of movies. These are three movies that came out 3 years apart from each other, from starting in 1977 with the first movie, Star Wars, and then the second movie, The Empire Strikes Back, and then finally the third movie that ended the original trilogy, The Return of the Jedi. And the reason why I thought it would be a good idea to talk about the trilogy as a whole as opposed to each movie individually was because it's been a really long time since I've seen the Star Wars movies, and I haven't really seen the original ones since the final movies in the series came out just a couple years ago. And I thought it would be a really fun idea to revisit each of them chronologically in the order that they were released in. Especially now that we have all nine movies, as that was the original vision that George Lucas had intended. I also feel that each of the trilogies feel really cohesive, and for example, when you see the second and third movie within especially the original trilogy, it really changes how your perception of the first movie is. And then the third movie changes your perception of the second movie. So I feel like it really benefits one to take a stance back and examine the movies individually, and then also how well they work as a cohesive whole. Of course, we will start talking about the very first Star Wars movie to come into existence. This is 1977's Star Wars. And of course, it is worth noting that after the second movie came out, George Lucas changed the title to Episode 4, A New Hope. And what's interesting about each of the Star Wars movies is how they start out with a very iconic opening text crawl, which is where they'll give like a 3-paragraph background where they'll try to give you background information that's needed to kind of understand the basis of what's going on in the opening scenes, but giving so without completely overwhelming the viewer. And as the opening text of this movie explains, you have the evil Galactic Empire, which is dominating the galaxy, and they've built an evil space station called the Death Star, which is capable of destroying an entire planet. And then Princess Leia is the leader of the Rebel Alliance, and she manages to steal plans to the Death Star, and she hopes to return the Death Star plans to the Rebels so that they can find a weakness that the Death Star has, and then use that to their advantage to hopefully destroy the evil space station. And what's really interesting about the narrative structure of this movie is how the main protagonist, Luke Skywalker, isn't introduced until about 20 minutes into the movie. Instead, you start out with two droids, C-3PO and R2-D2. And I think it was a really bold move to start off the science fiction movie with basically robots. And I remember when I first saw this movie when I was maybe 7 years old, it was probably something that I actually didn't like about the movie that much, because it was a little hard for me at the time to empathize with the robots, and I was used to seeing action movies with human characters that I could relate to. But looking at it now, I think it was a really genius move of George Lucas to kind of rip off the band-aid, so to speak, and just kind of plunge the audience into, like, being very immersed in what is probably the future in a galaxy very far away from ours.
I also thought it was a really good decision to start the movie with R2-D2 and C-3PO, because it really personifies their characters. Although they are robots, they are capable of, you know, communicating with the other characters in the movie, and it is a big part of why a lot of people who watch the movies find them to be some of the most memorable characters and some of their favorites as well.
I agree. I think it also really serves to emphasize how much humanity, ironically, can be found in the droids. C-3PO is a really great example of this because I feel like he actually provides some of the movie's best humor and how, and kind of how arrogant he is in his abilities and also in how cowardly he can be. I think this is especially clear in the third, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but in the third movie, Return of the Jedi, when he's clearly frightened of undergoing the mission to Jabba's palace, and he knocks on the door, on the door of the palace very softly, and he's like, "Well, that didn't work. Let's go back," because they didn't answer the door right away. And then, as mentioned, we're very soon introduced to Luke Skywalker, who is, I think, r a really great protagonist for the audience to connect to because he's the one who, of the main protagonists of the series, he's the one who initially seems the least involved in anything that's going on. Like, we're introduced to Han Solo, who's a very talented pilot and a smuggler, a bit of a gangster character too. And then, of course, Princess Leia is the leader of the rebels, but Luke is just a farm boy. He feels as though he has no part in the battle between the Great Galactic Empire and then the Rebel Alliance. But it's something that he's eventually forced into when both his aunt and uncle are killed by the Imperial Stormtroopers as they're searching for the droids C-3PO and R2-D2, since they finally discover that they must be the ones that have the stolen Death Star plans. I feel like something that's really special about this movie is how I feel like it's really accessible for a science fiction movie. I feel like science fiction is a genre that a lot of people get turned off to because they kind of scare, for them it gets stereotyped as something that's really nerdy and has a really, really focuses too much on how the technology works. But Star Wars is a friend, even as not just this movie, but as the franchise, never really focuses that much on the technology or definitely not the science of things. And it may sound surprising how I feel about this, but I feel like the Star Wars series of movies is more in line with The Wizard of Oz than how it is would be in line with Star Trek. Because The Wizard of Oz, like Star Wars, it doesn't even try to explain to you how its world works. There are a lot of things that are made to simply dazzle the viewer, especially with the special effects and just with the creativity and imagination of the world and having a production that's really ahead of its time. Star Wars definitely isn't like Star Trek. It doesn't try to dwell on the logical causes and effects or scientific technologies of how the ships run or anything like that. It's supposed to be a very out-of-body experience that focuses on the adventure and immersive experience of being in another world. And then kind of like how Dorothy Gale is like an ordinary farm girl that kind of gets swept against her will into something that she's completely over her head. In Luke Skywalker is similarly a farm boy that he initially believes is getting swept into a lifestyle that he's completely unaccustomed to, but as it's later revealed, he was kind of destined to this path, as it was a part of his bloodline. Another thing that's really fascinating about Star Wars is even for people who have never bothered to see these movies before, they even know who practically all of the characters are, as well as all of the actors who play the characters. People know who even don't know the roles in the movies. They know who Princess Leia is, played by Carrie Fisher. They, of course, know Luke Skywalker, played by Mark Hamill. They know of Chewbacca, C-3PO, R2-D2, and everyone, of course, knows who Han Solo, played by Harrison Ford, is.
This was my first time ever watching the Star Wars movies. Growing up, Sutton would watch them, and I would maybe catch a glimpse of them being in the room. So while we rewatched them, I remembered little parts of the movies, but overall, it was my first time watching them. And I was really shocked at how much I enjoyed the movies because I didn't think that these types of movies would be what I was interested in, specifically, the sci-fi aspects, but it really shocked me, and it makes me realize why so many people are Star Wars fans.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you enjoyed that as much as he did, especially because I feel like a lot of people get turned off to the sci-fi aspects. But again, I feel like Star Wars falls more into fantasy type movies than science fiction. And I feel like they do appeal to a much larger audience if people were more willing to give them a chance. And then as far as the characters go, this is a movie that George Lucas, when he made the first one, he wanted a lot of new faces and people who weren't that recognizable yet as actors, because then people could it would be a lot easier for people to associate the actors with the characters that they were playing. For example, when people watch the Titanic and they see Jack, I'm not sure that Jack is the first thing that pops into people's heads. Rather, I feel like a lot of people think Leonardo DiCaprio, and that's who they see that character as opposed to him having his own separate identity. And he also wanted people who he had never worked with before. Star Wars was actually the third movie that he made. And there was actually one time where one instance in which he broke this rule, and that was with Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford had a very small role in George Lucas's previous movie called American Graffiti, and I think Harrison Ford was just working as an assistant at the time. He would During the auditions, he would read lines along with the other actors. So he wasn't even auditioning for parts, but George Lucas liked how he was like how well he's doing it, so he decided to cast him as the role of Han Solo. Of course, I have to mention Alec Guinness as Ben or Obi-Wan Kenobi, because the movie studio 20th Century Fox didn't like how a movie with that this much money was being put into had a lot of actors that people had never heard of before. So they pressured George Lucas into choosing at least a couple people who were well established, and Alec Guinness was definitely at the time he was considered a veteran film actor, and he was definitely the person with the most acting experience. A lot of the other actors, such as Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford, have noted how his professionalism had inspired them everyone on the set, and Alec Guinness's basically just his energy, the energy that he's putting into the movie, inspired people to take their work seriously. And the reason why I focus so much on Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan is because during the Academy Awards, Alec Guinness was actually nominated Best Supporting Actor for his role as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And that was the only time that an actor in a Star Wars movie has been nominated for an acting role at the Academy Awards. He was also one of the few people who actually believed that Star Wars would be a success. A lot of people were worried and thought that the movie would be a financial failure. Although this may seem really ridiculous now, given how the movie spawned one of the most financially successful franchises of all time, it was just so far ahead of its time and unlike anything that people had seen or experienced before. And a lot of people just frankly just found the whole thing to be very childlike. And to them it felt like something that they were doing only for children. Of course, that proved to be really wrong, as Star Wars is actually the highest grossing movie at that time. And even though its action and likable characters probably appealed greatly to children. I think that it also allowed adults to have a very childlike sense of joy again that they haven't felt in a really long time. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the characters or the actors that portrayed them?
Obviously, one of the major actors in the movie is Harrison Ford, who played Han Solo. And he was a very interesting character. He had a very dark sense of humor, and sometimes he would have a short temper and, get mad at people easily. And it really just showed how great of an actor Harrison Ford is. And what's interesting is that he ended up playing Indiana Jones in the Indiana Jones movies while they were filming the Star Wars movies. So there was an overlap. After the second movie of Star Wars came out, then they filmed Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I feel like this really opened the door for Harrison Ford to play more roles in the future. And in future movies, he also played a similar character like this, who had a short temper and acted like this. And also, Carrie Fisher is obviously an iconic actress in the movie. A lot of people know her for her hairstyles in the movie, and she's a character that everybody loves, and I can't picture anyone else playing her in the movies.
I agree. I think this is really special for Harrison Ford because out of the unknown actors in this movie, he's probably the one that was the most successful in establishing a career that wasn't just overshadowed by his Star Wars role, as he became known for Indiana Jones and then Blade Runner, for example. I think Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia is really important to the trilogy because she's probably the only one of the main female characters. So, but her character as Leia is often credited as breaking a lot of the gender norms in action movies, as she was someone who was really willing to take charge and do what she thought was right to save the people that she cared for. What's really special about the scene that introduces Harrison Ford as Han Solo is how it takes place inside of this bar called the Mos Eisley Cantina. And of course you have this really famous kind of jazz disco music playing in it. And it's the first movie in Star Wars that really kind of serves to dazzle the viewer with all the different alien creatures. This was decades before CGI was capable of like creating aliens, so everything had to be done with practical effects and costume work, and it's a very impactful scene that really serves to highlight the ingenuity of the filmmakers. And then after that, they of course you have the famous Death Star sequence, which is when they're running around and Ben Kenobi runs off first in order to turn off the tractor beam that's sucked the Millennium Falcon into the Death Star in the first place. And then they find out that the Princess Leia is being held prisoner on the Death Star, so then they have to go and rescue her. Do you have any thoughts on the sequence that of the scenes that take place within the Death Star?
One of the major scenes from this part of the movie is when Han Solo, Princess Leia, and I think the droids are stuck inside this room when they went inside of a trash chute, and slowly the walls start to slowly compress and get shorter and shorter and narrower, and it's a really stressful scene, and you're really curious as to how they're going to get out of that situation because there's maybe 2 feet left and you think that they're going to get squished, and then suddenly I think R2-D2 is able to go through the computers and stop the walls from compressing them, and they were able to make it out alive.
I agree, that was probably one of the most exciting scenes in the movie. And And I feel like I have a really emotional connection with all the guest star scenes because of this $400 Lego set that I got for my birthday when I might have been 10, even though the box said for ages 16 plus. And because that thing, a lot of money, time was devoted to building that set, and it had all of the major rooms from the movie, and then also from the second Death Star that would be built in the third movie. So I remember how much I loved to reenact the scenes from the movies and like verbatim. So yeah, the Death Star scenes have always been a big part of my childlike joy for this franchise. And something that was like hilarious about the trash compactor scene is when Archie manages to stop the walls in time, and then they're on the intercom with C-3PO, and they start screaming with joy that they got saved, and then C-3PO, he's like terrified because he hears screaming on the other side, so he think he's like so distressed he thinks that he failed the other characters because he didn't have the intercom turned on quickly enough. So he thinks that he's hearing the screams, and he thinks that he's hearing them all being crushed to death. And then, of course, the Death Star is where the very first lightsaber fight actually takes place, and that's between Ben Kenobi and Darth Vader. And what's interesting about the scene is how you get a sense that there is a lot to the story that the viewers have not seen yet, because they talk about their past, and the Darth Vader says to Ben Kenobi, "The circle is complete. When I left you, I was the learner. Now I'm the master." So you really get a sense that the two characters have a very deep history, a very deep backstory to with the two of them. But again, it's important that the viewer is watching these early major events through the eyes of the characters who aren't as experienced or even as knowledgeable as the people who are thought as the war heroes or the equivalent of war generals. So you're learning things about the universe along with the character Luke Skywalker, and you're also witnessing these characters as they grow in experience and they eventually become capable of impacting how the galaxy is led. And then after that sequence, you have the climax of the movie, which involves the space battle that takes place within the Death Star's trenches. And this is as the characters have to fire torpedo missiles into the exhaust port of the Death Star so that they can blow the whole thing up. And while this is going on, the Death Star has to wait 30 minutes for the planet that the rebellion bases on to basically appear from behind of the planet that's orbiting around. And then when that happens, then the Death Star can use its ultimate weapon to destroy the planet as well as the rebellion once and for all. How do you feel that this worked as a climax for the movie?
This is a very action-filled and impactful part of the movie. You know, there's a lot going on, and while Luke and the other people of the rebellion are, you know, shooting into the middle of the Death Star, you keep on seeing all the other shooters get hit one by one and slowly dwindle off, and then Luke is the last one standing, and obviously he's able to do it, and the Death Star explodes, but then you see that Darth Vader is still alive and he made it out. So then you know that, you know, the job isn't done. And although not in this movie, in future movies, you know that they're still going to go after him and the job isn't over yet.
Exactly. I think it's a really exciting sequence for the very first Star Wars movie, and it allows for Han Solo to redeem himself as Luke and Leia kind of held grudges against him for being too full of himself. Han was just interested in rescuing the princess for the money, But then when Luke is being pursued by Darth Vader and then a couple other TIE fighters, suddenly Han appears from behind them, and then shoots all the ships that are pursuing Luke right when they're about to fire on him. And even though a lot of people consider Star Wars to be a masterpiece, one of the main criticisms that I'll read about it, if I do read criticisms at all, is that this final sequence maybe runs about 5 minutes too long, which maybe it does go a bit long because you are watching a bunch of ships flying around, for maybe 15 minutes or so. I still feel like it's worth having in there just for how dazzling it is in the special effects, and you can really feel that the crew had to have spent a lot of time into these effects, so it probably would have hurt them to feel like they had to remove parts of the sequence out of it in order to tighten up the pacing.
Something that I noticed about the first movie is that it ends on a very satisfying note with Han Solo and Luke getting medals and ending with a big happy celebration with everyone in the rebellion. And Chewie unfortunately did not get a medal, even though he helped a lot. But this is in stark contrast to the second movie, which ends more on a cliff note, because at that point they knew how successful Star Wars was and they knew that there was going to be at least a third movie. So they weren't sure after the first movie how successful it was going to be, so they wanted it to have this satisfying ending, so that if this movie was a flop and they weren't able to make another one, then it would still make sense on its own as a solo movie as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really interesting way to look at it. In case the movie failed, then the movie would work well on its own as its own movie. But they still left open the possibility where it would be really easy for them to make more movies, because they made it very clear at the end that Darth Vader was still alive and out there. And a bit of a quick, interesting tidbit that just really shows how little faith people had that this movie would be a success was that 20th Century Fox actually kind of had to blackmail movie theaters into buying and showing Star Wars, because there's a movie that was called something like The Other Side of Midnight, and obviously I don't think anyone's heard of that movie before except for its relations to Star Wars. And this was a movie that a lot of people thought would be the big summer release, and it would be the big blockbuster. So a lot of theaters wanted this movie from 20th Century Fox, but 20th Century Fox told they blackmailed theaters, and they said that, "Well, we'll give this movie to you, but on the condition that you also agree to accept and screen Star Wars." So they forced movie theaters to show Star Wars, and then I think on the initial release date there were 32 theaters that showed Star Wars. It was a very, very limited release, and then even if the movie did moderately really successful, I think it would have like slowly expanded as is usual. But even with like how small the number of theaters were that were playing this movie, those theaters quickly sold out, and then the movie kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. With how successful the movie was, it was obvious that a sequel would take place, and I feel like it's a bit of a Hollywood stereotype that sequels are cash grabs and fail to live up to the original work. So, how do you feel like the second movie, The Empire Strikes Back, compares to the first movie? Both in the quality of the filmmaking and also in terms of how daring it is to do something different.
I'm usually not a fan of sequel movies, but I actually think that this one was just as good as the first movie. It really thickens the plot and really develops the characters well. You're able to, introduce some new characters like Lando, and, further develop the complicated relationship between Han Solo, Leia, and Luke.
I agree. And then they introduced Lando, and of course you can't leave out Yoda as well, because Obi-Wan Kenobi was really important to the first movie as he's the mentor character to Luke Skywalker. The audience is kind of thrown into the world of Star Wars without given much context as to how the universe plays out. And that's because it's not important. It's a type of movie that you can kind of turn your brain off to and just enjoy the lovable characters and special effects. But Obi-Wan Kenobi was essential at providing some of the basic knowledge about this universe that is needed for the audience to enjoy the movie. He explains to Luke what the Force is, and then that, of course, lets the audience know how the Force works. And then since he gets killed off, Luke isn't a Jedi yet, so he obviously needs another mentor character. And of course, they can just get like a repeat of. They can't come up with another character that's similar to Obi-Wan Kenobi, so they came up with a character who probably couldn't be more different to him. And this was Yoda, who's like a 1.5 foot tall green puppet-like creature who lives in a swamp-like planet. And the puppetry work is really fantastic. It's phenomenal. Again, this is before the era of computers, so, or at least computers that are capable of showing 3D realistic aliens. So it all had to be practically done, and that was through puppetry. It's really impressive even by today's modern standards. And as a sequel, I think that this movie does a really good job of deepening the characters as well as the lore of Star Wars. I feel like the first movie was very jovial and very lighthearted, but I feel like when they made this movie, which came out 3 years after the first one, they had a much better sense of the power that Star Wars had on people. And this movie, if I feel like it is a much more confident movie than the first one was. It's a lot darker in nature, and it's willing to go to places in different directions that the first movie wouldn't have dared going in. I think when I talked about how this movie really deepens how we see these characters, a lot of the way that that's largely done is through the kind of love triangle between Luke, Leia, and Han Solo, and this contributes a lot to the film's humor, where Han kind of insists that Leia is like desperately in love with him, and then Leia tries to act like she can care less about him, and then Leia tries to like really show this to Han by kissing Luke Skywalker. Of course, this would appear very awkward as they're later revealed to be siblings, Luke and Leia, in the third movie. And there were conflicting arguments as to whether George, like, at this point, planned for Luke and Leia to be siblings or not, but even if not, I feel like the reveal in the third movie that Leia is Luke's sister is very well foreshadowed in this movie. And there were two instances where this occurs. This is when Luke leaves Dagobah, which is the swamp-like planet that Yoda inhabits, to save his friends from the Cloud City. He leaves in his ship, and then Yoda and the ghost apparition of Ben Kenobi converse with each other. Ben Kenobi says to Yoda that boy is her last hope, and then Yoda says, "No, there is another." I think the reason why there were two reasons why why they had this line in there. The first was that was to give the movie a little bit more sense of hope, because they knew that this is a much darker movie than the first one. And the second reason was to give the audience the impression that Luke might actually die in this battle with Vader. And then, of course, this makes sense when he says there's another. He's referring to Leia, who, because of her blood being part, he's part of the Skywalker bloodline. She's also capable of using the Force. And then this is revealed to be true when Luke telepathically communicates with her, when he's like dangling above the clouds, and then he has to communicate with her telepathically in order to let her know that he's there and she needs to turn the ship around to save him. Another sequence that had a really big impact on me was when Luke is on Dagobah during his Jedi training, and then he goes into a very dark place, both metaphorically and literally, of the jungle. And this is where he experiences a vision where Vader is there, and then he fights Vader. He decapitates Vader, and then Vader's mask blows off, and then beneath the mask, Luke sees his face there. And again, I feel like that's the way that this movie deals with the themes of good versus evil is a lot more daring than the first movie, as it really introduces the concept that Luke could actually become could actually join the dark side and follow the steps that his father did. It really foreshadows how Vader would eventually, in the climax of the movie, be revealed to be his father, and it would also foreshadow the possibility that Luke could actually join him to rule the galaxy together. So we've established that the second movie is definitely a worthy successor to the first movie. Do you feel like there's one that you like even just slightly better than the other, or would you say you like them both equally?
Even though I really liked both of the movies, I would say that I like the second one better because, you know, you've gotten past getting introduced to all the characters, and obviously the first one is a little more slow to start because you're getting introduced to everything. So I feel like the second one really is more action filled and you're getting to better understand the relationships between the characters. So I feel like the complexity is a lot more established within the second movie. So I like that one better.
I agree. I think those are some really good points. For example, like you said, the first movie has a bit of a slow start. The second movie starts off with, in a really exciting way, with a giant spaceship battle on the ice planet Hoth. And then I think that the relationship between Vader and Luke, it's a lot more intriguing than anything that was put forth in the first movie. And then after the second movie, 3 years after this movie came out, we had Return of the Jedi, the third and concluding movie in this trilogy of movies. Did you have any favorite moments from this movie or anything that really stood out to you?
One of my favorite parts of the movie was definitely when Luke finds out that he has a sister and he's not the only Skywalker left who, you know, he isn't the last hope. And then he finds out that it's Leia and, you know, he seemed so happy and surprised. So I thought that was a really crucial scene. And even though he really probably wanted to tell Leia right away, he knew that he had to wait for the right moment because, you know, they were trying to fight the Empire. So he didn't want to distract her and he wanted to wait for the right time to tell her that they were siblings, which is kind of awkward because in the previous movies they had actually kissed. So.
Yeah, it's really awkward, but I do really enjoy how this movie, again, really homed in on the relationships between Luke and Leia this time. And I feel like, kind of like how Star Wars is a fantasy series that's disguised as science fiction, I feel like you could also put forth the argument that Star Wars is really a family drama that's disguised as a science fiction franchise. And something else that's kind of interesting that I pointed out is how each of these movies in the trilogy actually had a different director. George Lucas directed the first movie, and then because of the stress that he felt he under had to undergo in order to accomplish that, he got a different person to direct the second movie, and then got a completely different third person to direct the third and final movie. And I do want to say, now that we're talking about the final movie and the trilogy as a whole, that I feel like they did a really good job of making the whole thing feel as cohesive as possible. When they started this, they didn't even know that they would be making a trilogy. They thought they would maybe make five or six movies and just see how well this would be successful for. But then after just making the second movie, The Empire Strikes Back, George was feeling stressed about the whole thing, so he decided that he would make it a neat little trilogy, and then he would maybe later go back and make his prequels that he had already been planning at that point. I feel like all three movies could basically be seen as one 6 hour 15 minute movie because they did that good of a job in making everything feel cohesive. Not only do they have the given directors working against them, but these movies were made several years apart from each other. The last movie in the trilogy was released 6 years after the first movie. But I feel like the only thing that feels really noticeably different going from movie to movie is the increasing maturity of the actors as well as the characters that they are playing. But again, I feel like that's really appropriate given what's going on within the story. Both, especially Luke Skywalker, is a character that's supposed to be maturing over the course of the movies as he really grows in experience and becomes more confident as a Jedi and as a human being.
I definitely noticed that Luke's character matured throughout the three movies. In the first one, he was not even a part of this whole rebellion and he was kind of drawn into it. And then throughout the series, you see him, be trained by Yoda. And in the third movie, he is so strong with all of his, using the Force and being able to manipulate people. And he just has this confidence that he didn't have in the first few movies.
Something else I find interesting about the movies is how it feels like they're constantly trying to outdo themselves with the climaxes. For example, in the first movie, the climax is the battle within the Death Star trenches as they try to blow it up. In the second movie, The Empire Strikes Back, you have Luke's duel with Darth Vader, and then you also have Leia, Chewbacca, and those characters trying to escape Cloud City and hopefully rescue Han. And then the action keeps intercutting between those two situations. And then finally, the third movie, and the final one in the trilogy, you have Luke's duel with Vader and the Emperor. You have Lando Calrissian's attempt to blow up the second Death Star as he leads his crew of the Rebels. And then while that's going on, you also have Han Solo, Leia, and Chewie on the moon Endor as they try to blow up the basically the satellite dish station that's creating a sh basically they're trying to blow up the shield generator that's creating a shield protecting the second Death Star. And it's kind of fascinating how this time it's intercutting the action between three different intense situations that are all connected to each other. You have Lando trying to blow up the Death Star, but he relies on the fact that they're trying to blow up the shield generator. And then you also have Luke and the Emperor on the Death Star itself, and that has to finish up before the Death Star gets blown up. And something that I find really interesting is how the first and second movies, Star Wars and then The Empire Strikes Back, you'll often see these movies listed among some of the greatest movies of all time. Especially The Empire Strikes Back is probably the movie that gets shown the most often at Star Wars and fan conventions. However, while the third movie, The Return of the Jedi, also is viewed really favorably, I feel like it isn't really seen as on par with the first two movies. So I'm wondering, how do you view the third chapter to this saga in comparison to the first two?
I actually really enjoyed the third movie, and I wouldn't say that it was subpar compared to the first two movies. Something that I particularly enjoyed about the third movie was the way that they intensified Darth Vader's character. I feel like in the first two movies, obviously he's on the dark side and he's seen as evil and malicious, but then in the third movie, I almost started to feel some sympathy for him after the emperor was, killed, he really showed that the love he had for Luke and how he really cared for him, and that there really was a good side left to him and he wasn't all bad.
I agree. I think it's because it's kind of hard to believe that within that dark black suit, this sort of outer shell he has, that he does have good in him, but it's something that Luke strongly believes in, and that's how he's able to turn him back into the light side. And I feel like that's something that the prequels are really helpful in. If you watch the original trilogy, first, before watching the prequels that take place before this, then I feel like Darth Vader is viewed as a very intimidating character. But if you watch it chronologically with the prequels before the original trilogy, then I feel like he's viewed as a much more tragic character. Since the audience is able to understand what type of a person he was before he was coerced into the dark side of the Force through the Emperor. Was there anything that surprised you, or maybe went against your expectations of what Star Wars is, now that you know the full story of how the original trilogy of movies goes?
I guess I went into watching the movies thinking that it wouldn't be very relatable because obviously I don't live on, those types of planets and aren't fighting against all these aliens and extraterrestrials. But while watching the movies, I realized that it's actually a lot more relatable than I thought. The characters are going through tough life or death decisions, and characters like Luke and Leia have to really decide whether to listen to their gut or what the force is telling them to do, or do what other people that are telling them to do. So they have to deal with a lot of different dilemmas, and you really put yourself in their shoes and try to figure out what you would do in those situations. So I found the movies a lot more relatable than I thought.
I'm glad to hear that you enjoy these movies, maybe about as much as I've enjoyed them. Even though I feel like I don't have the same nostalgia for Star Wars as I do for something like Indiana Jones, for example. It's still something that I've really grown to appreciate and admire over the years, and even probably more so as I've grown older. Maybe down the road, I think it would be interesting if we take a look at the other two trilogies. For example, it's made really clear during this series of movies that the audience is really just witnessing a part of a much, much larger story. In fact, what's something that's kind of surprising is in the second movie, on like official movie posters and even just like officially, the movie was just called The Empire Strikes Back. But in the opening title crawl, you'll see that George Lucas wrote down the subtitle, Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. And I'm sure that this would have really confused audiences who thought that they were going in to see the second movie, and suddenly they see the subtitle, Episode 5. So they think that somehow the movie series went from the first movie to the fifth movie. But what it really meant was that at this point, George was really plan had this really big plan for Star Wars, where he would end up making 9 movies, and he thought that even if he failed to do that, it would be really nice aesthetically for the audience to feel like they were watching a small part of a lot much larger story, almost as if they were watching like a TV show where they skipped the first few episodes. And I think it would be interesting to view and discuss the prequel trilogy to see the younger characters of Ben Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker. But even more especially, I think it's really fascinating to watch the sequel trilogy coming off the heels of this. George Lucas was kind of amused by the idea that he could make movies about what the characters Han, Luke, and Leia are like in their 80s, when the actors themselves who originally played them are also in their 80s. And there were a lot of events during these movies that foreshadow that there are future events that will be explored, such as how it's revealed that Leia is capable of using the Force, and that's not something that I really see much of in the last movie of the trilogy. I think something else that would really be of interest in watching the sequels is how a lot of today's movie stars, such as Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver, were previously unknowns before they were cast in these movies. And it really parallels how in these original three movies, a lot of the characters, a lot of the actors were originally unknown actors when they were first cast as these characters. And at this point and now they're definitely household names. So what the sequel trilogy did for today's movie stars is what the original movies did for that generation's set of movie stars. And I actually recently found out that the writing professor at my previous school comes from a family of famous Irish actors. So his brother actually plays the character known as General Hux from all three movies of the sequel trilogy. And he's actually one of the main villains of that trilogy of mi Star Wars movies. So I think it would be really fascinating to rewatch those with keeping that in mind and really focusing on his character.
I really enjoyed watching the series, and I'd love to watch both the prequel and the sequel. So I look forward to the future movies and maybe another episode as well.
Yeah, and I really look forward to that. Of course, variety is something that I really enjoy having in this podcast series, but it will be a lot of fun if we get to do those sometime down the road. Well, thank you for tuning in, and this is Such a Non-Cinema and Sound.
And Kylie.